The California Board of Education unanimously voted to adopt the Common Core State Standard Education Curriculum on Monday. The Common Core Standards, which are voluntarily adopted by states, unifies national education policy and is preferred by the Obama administration. California is one of 19 states competing for hundreds of millions of dollars in federal grant money under President Obama's Race to the Top education program. This is widely understood to have motivated the Board of Education's decision, although converting to Common Core standards does not guarantee any money. In the competition, states are given points in a number of areas according to their compliance with Race to the Top standards. Education Secretary Arne Duncan has said that the competition sparked a quiet revolution across the nation because as states compete for federal dollars, they're making major changes to their education policies. Critics say the competition for federal education money has forced cash-strapped states to make controversial decisions that will exacerbate problems for low-income school districts. A large coalition of civil rights groups has publicly criticized Race to the Top, calling it a market-based framework that will lead to the privatization of education, saying there is, quote, nothing short of a state of emergency in the delivery of education to our nation's communities of color. They have introduced an alternative framework. Here to discuss the Race to the Top and the movement for an alternative is Paulina Lippman. She's a professor of educational policy studies at the University of Illinois in Chicago and the director of the Collaborative for Equity and Justice in Education. She's an education activist based in Chicago. Welcome to Uprising, Paulina.
Thank you. It's actually Pauline.
I'm sorry about that, Pauline. Pauline, let's talk about the Common Core State Standards first that Arne Duncan is saying has sparked, the Race to the Top has sparked a quiet revolution with 19 states now adopting these Common Core Standards. Traditionally, the United States has had quite a patchwork of education standards. It's not a common standard. And other countries do have common standards across their states and cities. Can this not be a positive thing?
Well, potentially it could be a positive thing. I think that educators are not opposed to, and obviously communities and parents are not opposed to, high educational standards for all students. The question becomes with any set of standards is looking closely at them to see what knowledge is actually included in those standards and what knowledge is not included or excluded in those standards, especially since we know that communities of color, women, have fought for years to have their perspectives, histories, and voices be part of the curriculum, to have multiple ways of looking at things. And I'm particularly concerned about a set of Common Core standards at a time when our education system is being really fully geared toward just preparing people for jobs and for what's known as economic competitiveness instead of really the full development of all children. So I think any set of standards has to be developed in consultation with communities and with educators in the classroom, and that's not the case with these standards.
Right, and so the question is, who has developed these standards? Where do they come from?
Well, they were supposedly developed by a set of, educational professionals, but that belies the question of the input of communities into the standards, and I think there's really a bigger issue, which is that when we create a set of standards, and then we hold schools to those standards, and we actually develop assessments or high-stakes tests based on meeting those standards and then provide punishments for schools and teachers and students that don't meet the standards, then we've actually are just reproducing the same punitive system that we have right now, particularly when there is not equal opportunity to learn.
Now, how much of the Race to the Top initiative includes these sort of punitive measures against teachers?
Well, one of the key provisions is to tie teacher pay to evaluation of student performance. And that's very problematic because anyone who knows really anything about what goes on in schools knows that, first of all, that we have tremendous disparities in the funding of public education in this country, in the kinds of resources that are available, that communities themselves, low-income communities of color, are under tremendous stress, and families are struggling to not only make ends meet, but to find housing, food, etc. And so under those conditions, asking children to meet these same standards without the same kinds of economic supports and benefits that more affluent students have is obviously inequitable, and is going to result in inequitable results.
Now, let's talk about the way in which the president and his education secretary are going about trying to get states around the country to adopt their model. It seems as though this is a form of a shock doctrine, basically offering money to states at a time when so many states like California are struggling so deeply, offering them money if they adopt these new federal standards, sort of holding a gun to their heads.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, Naomi Klein talks about disaster capitalism. And this is really a form of disaster capitalism because, as you said, particularly urban school districts, but states as a whole, are facing a real crisis. We're seeing major budget cuts, layoffs of teachers, increases in class sizes, and the federal government has then come forward and said, well, we'll give you money. But first of all, we won't give money to every state. We'll create a competition. And so it was really a brilliant move because what it did was it basically pushed many, many states to agree to lift the cap on charter schools, to support tying teacher pay to student evaluations, and to promise to close schools and turn them over to charter schools or private turnaround specialists, on the hope that that would give them points in the race to the top. So it's really this race to the top initiative is really part of the larger neoliberal project to privatize public education and undermine teacher unions and make public schools act more like businesses and less like places for the full development of human beings.
But even teachers' unions and many progressive educational activists around the country acknowledge that the U.S.'s educational system is deeply in trouble, particularly in certain parts of the country. So what is this alternative framework that some folks have put together? How can education be improved without resorting to the types of initiatives that we've seen from Presidents Obama and Bush?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I think that's really the question, because the way the issue is being framed by the White House, and they're really just repeating the frame that we've been hearing in Chicago over the last 10, 12 years, which is that their program is about change, and anyone who opposes that program doesn't want change. And in fact, teachers, students, communities want not only change, but transformation in public education. So I think two very significant frameworks came out this week. One is the one that you referred to in your introduction, which is the framework for providing all students an equal opportunity to learn that was produced by 7 civil rights organizations. And that's very significant because that framework is actually a departure from the test and punish and privatize agenda that we've had. And it focuses on a different set of standards, which is we have all these standards that we're holding people to for test scores or for curriculum, but we have no standards for opportunity to learn. So they call for a common set of opportunity to learn standards. In other words, what kinds of resources should be provided? And that includes things like high-quality early childhood education, highly effective teachers, and a broad college-bound curriculum that will prepare all students to participate effectively in our democracy, as well as equitable resources.
So equalizing opportunities rather than standards.
That's right. That's right. And they also say that schools should only be closed as a last resort for budget or population reasons, because they recognize what we've seen very clearly in Chicago, which is that schools are anchors in communities, and when you close those schools, you disrupt the community seriously. The other framework that came out.
And let me just also mention that the groups involved in this first framework you were talking about include the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, the National Urban League, the Rainbow Push Coalition, the NAACP itself, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under Law National Action Network. So a number of very prominent major national civil rights groups, not necessarily, you know, small, unheard of groups, but major groups.
That's right. And I think that framework in particular really marks a turning point in which some folks who were not that clear about some of these issues, weren't sure, for example, when No Child Left Behind came out, have really seen the effects of these policies now over the last 8 years, and in Chicago more than that, and therefore have turned to a different framework. And the second report, I just want to mention briefly,
yes, the second one.
In the same week, last week, is the Communities for Excellent Public Schools, which is a new coalition of, I think it's 18 community-based organizations composed of low-income parents and students. And they released a report called Our Communities Left Behind. And they basically reiterate some of these same points. They focus on three key elements for transforming low-performing schools. The first one is a collaborative and inclusive process. In other words, involving communities, community wisdom, as well as educators' knowledge in a process of transforming schools. The second one is a comprehensive instructional and school culture reform. We cannot transform schools simply by setting standards and holding teachers to students' test scores. We actually have to transform teaching and learning and the culture of schools, including culturally relevant teaching. And the third one is to coordinate services to meet student needs, to provide the kinds of full range of supports for students who are facing dire crises because of an economic crisis that has actually been produced by the very corporations and public policies that are now talking about privatizing public education. So those are the three. So we see these two new frameworks coming forward that focus much more on how do we rebuild or re-envision public education for the common good rather than trying to make public schools consumer products, essentially, in which parents compete for, and teachers as competitors with each other, each teacher competing with another teacher for who can get the students with the highest test scores.
Pauline Lipman, Arne Duncan has said education is the civil rights issue of our generation. Perhaps on that you might agree with him, but of course where he and President Obama are heading is definitely a matter of contention for many progressive educators and educational activists around the country. Do you think President Obama is going to take note and his administration and education department will take note of these new frameworks, particularly by some of these major well-known organizations? And are they forcing him to listen?
Well, I think that really depends on us. As I said before, this education project is this particular proposal, the Race to the Top, or it's not a proposal, it's a project in the works, is part of a larger agenda which goes back over 20 years to privatize public education. And there are many powerful forces behind that, including transnational investment corporations and neoliberals who are trying to privatize all aspects of our public life. And so this is a real battle. And it won't be won by simply producing proposals, although it's the first step in reframing the issues. It's going to be won by a lot of organizing, by parents and students and teachers in communities. I will say this. We have been fighting Renaissance 2010, which is sort of a precursor to this Race to the Top, in Chicago since 2004, and that's where it was really tested out and developed. And we've fought it every year, and we've had some victories and only gotten so far. And sometimes I've wondered, well, how much effect are we really having? But I think what we're seeing is a real rumbling at the grassroots of people seeing that this agenda is not working. And we've seen that overtime, our organizing, in fact, is now having an effect.
Well, Pauline,
at the national level.
I want to thank you very much for joining us today, and best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Pauline Lipman is a professor of educational policy studies at the University of Illinois Chicago and director of the Collaborative for Equity and Justice in Education. She's an education activist based in Chicago. For Sonali Subversive Thought for the Day, Paulo Freire once said, education either functions as an instrument which is used to facilitate integration of the younger generation into the logic of the present system and bring about conformity, or it becomes the practice of freedom, the means by which men and women deal critically and creatively with reality and discover how to participate in the transformation of their world. That's Paulo Freire. That's Sonali Subversive Thought for the Day.